Good evening and welcome to Extinctionati meeting 128. It is the 11th of December 2022.
Extinctionati meeting.
Oh, and I'm feeding back on myself. That's not a good start, is it? So let's start again. Extinctionati meeting 128. It is the 11th of the 12th, 2022. And I hope everyone who's listening can still afford the heating because it's getting quite nippy out there. And so I think everybody's watching their gas meter. Also, notably, I guess, and there's a reflection of this in the meeting title today, which is the semi-final countdown, that the England team has been knocked out of the EU at last, and everybody is despairing. There's wailing and gnashing of teeth. Meanwhile, we're also counting down to the end of civilization as we know it. And I don't know, let's check in with the across the pond buddies. Cornford, have you got any report from the United States?
Well, nothing regarding soccer. What did, as we call it here, funny enough. I think Team USA was knocked out by the Netherlands, maybe last week.
I think it's football, actually, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, American football is in full swing, and they are bashing their heads into each other faster and more rapaciously than ever. That's entertaining to watch sometimes. But, you know, not a ton of an update for me. I've been a little buried underwater, but, you know, thinking about final countdowns, we finally have a count on the Georgia Senate race. So Raphael Warnock defeated the head-bashed-in, insane football player who lived in Texas but ran for Senate in Georgia. This is how American politics works. You know, because he was a famous football player, he's fit to run the country.
Famous fitness.
Sorry?
Famous fitness.
Yeah. Yeah, if y'all have seen Idiocracy, it's... getting perilously close to that kind of situation here. Anyway, so it looks like the Senate will be controlled by the Democrats because Warnock won. But then, of course, immediately following this development, the centrist Democrat Kyrsten Sinema changed her affiliation to independent. So they're doing everything they can to maintain balance and gridlock in order to protect the corporate party here in the U.S. So that's fun. And of course, the House Republicans are taking over the U.S. House. Otherwise, there have been some interesting attacks on energy infrastructure here in the U.S. You know, a lot of details are still remaining hidden, and I haven't been able to follow it closely. But so there's football, you know, fighting in the U.S. House and Senate. And then fighting to shoot and blow up U.S. energy infrastructure, probably by right-wing paramilitaries. Fun times.
Can you tell me something about Duke Energy? Because in at least three different states, Duke Energy substations have been attacked. Is there something special about Duke Energy?
You know, I couldn't tell you if there's a particular thing. I mean, it's interesting that you note that. I saw that it was a Duke Energy station in North Carolina. I didn't know about the Northwest, so that's fascinating. But here's what I can say. You know, if somebody was interested in disrupting the energy infrastructure, no reason to target Duke in particular. You know, Duke may have particular vulnerabilities. Maybe it's an inside job. Maybe Duke is doing something like this. I don't know. But what I can say is Duke is a very interesting energy company that kind of has talons in markets all across the United States. I first became familiar with Duke in some, you know, fossil fuel fired power plants in California. So even I was impressed to find out that they, you know, have presence all the way out on the East Coast. So Duke Energy is kind of one of those mid to high level energy players in the U.S. And yeah, you're right, it is an their company. So hard to say. I don't know.
It was interesting because I found a video today that was 4 months old, and it informed me that Duke Energy was selling its renewable or green, you know, solar and wind department. They were selling that, so they were sort of shedding it and taking the profit, and I guess concentrating on the old dirty power. So that's maybe an angle that people want to, you know, if there were any green activists doing this, then maybe they were doing it, you know, to protest the fossil energy.
I mean, it's kind of interesting to see the Guardian sort of explicitly sort of explaining to us how vulnerable the system is, in case we didn't know already. And they're speculating that it's right-wing groups involved in this rather than environmentalists, which, again, I don't know whether you can trust that the Guardian know anything about anything. But what would be the motivation for right-wing groups in the United States? Do we have any idea about this? Like, why do white supremacists want to bring down the electricity system?
I think you have to look at the recent history where feds or FBI has been infiltrating and setting up different right extreme groups, and you know, trying really hard to make them kidnap politicians and do naughty stuff. It's kind of it's a dirty game. It's like,
are we talking false flag type of stuff, or?
Yeah, it's like setting up the right or the nationalists to be the evil guys. And from what I've seen anyway, the actual right is seeing through the tactic, and that may be a factor in this energy situation, that they want to carry on making the boogeyman, the far right boogeyman, but without any evidence, we can only speculate, I guess.
In the speculation, I think there's plenty to go around. I mean, you know, I think of it, obviously the FBI has been involved in creating agents provocateur and spreading them all around the nation, doing all kinds of nasty stuff. I can think of a few examples just offhand. But, the movement gets ahead of itself and is complicated. And, you know, who knows where this is coming from or who's doing it or if it's coordinated or not coordinated at all. And yeah, if it's a, you know, green direct action people, well, it's not terribly effective. You know, it's nice that it's targeted maybe at Duke because of all their coal-fired power, but, you know, it's a speed bump at best, right? Now, if it's the right-wing paramilitaries, on the other hand, it could be, as you said, going south, agents provocateur, the FBI setting this up. There's all kinds of subterfuge that could be involved. But then there's also paramilitaries that kind of, you know, may be working on their own. There's some talk in North Carolina that it was to shut down, drag shows that were occurring in that county, and had been highly controversial because the culture wars here in the U.S. are just couldn't be higher. You know, the fight couldn't be worse. And a lot of this has happened in rural areas that are typically embodied by, you know, folks on the right or paramilitary right. But I don't know. It's all speculation. To my knowledge, I don't know. There's plenty of fingers that could be pointed.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's the sense of... I don't know whether it's the fact that the United States obviously is just a bigger thing and it's the empire, but you hear these sort of stories a bit more from the US. And I don't know if there's a culture of sort of being able to reveal secret activity that comes out, because you don't hear the same extent in Britain, the degree to which you've got like agents infiltrating staff. And I don't know if GS knows more about this, but there's certainly been a history of sort of police and MI5, I guess, infiltrating protest groups in the UK. And there was not that many years ago released a load of information about how a particular undercover police, had got into a bunch of environmental groups and become quite an influential figure, and even sired children under the assumed identity. But you don't quite get the sort of Hollywood conspiracy stuff that you hear about the United States. So recently, I can't remember who was talking about this, but they say that Musk has fired somebody who was like an undercover FBI working at the Twitter office involved in censorship, and, you know, everything going back to sort of communism, McCarthyism, all that stuff, and JFK and 9/11, whatever the idea of this like deep state doing weird shit. Seems something that comes out more in relation to United States. As I say, maybe just because it's just such a large entity and stuff sort of spills out into the open more often, or at least into the sort of conspirosphere, if that's a thing. But it's very, very interesting hearing about this. And like, what if something like that worked, right? So we had, after 9/11, there are all these like weird incidents that seem to, I seem to recall that everything was traced back to like some sort of, security services, deep state sting. Like every, I can't remember, maybe I'll look it up afterwards, but there was some sort of journalist or some research came out saying that every single fucking American sort of terrorism, in inverted commas, related incident that happened during the period after 9/11 was instigated by the FBI or someone, you know, of that ilk. And there was, I remember the shoe bomber, which was a British guy, and that was just a hilarious episode where this bloke tried to set fire to some explosive in his shoes. And then there was some made up story about shampoo, people taking bottles of shampoo onto the plane that they were going to mix together in the toilet and cause a fire or detonate or something. And they're just these like completely ridiculous stories that are still influencing the policies of these agencies and influencing sort of security theater. And you think, well, if that shoe bomber guy had actually, I don't believe there was any chance that the guy was going to blow up a plane, but if someone blew up a plane, and I can't remember if this particular one, but I remember there were lots of incidences where it was revealed that these people were sort of goaded or set up by security services to do these actions. There was a connection of the bombings in London on the tube years ago. Again, there was a connection of people who were known to the security services, and basically the FBI or MI5 or whoever had been, it's suggested and alleged, connected to a disturbingly high number of so-called terrorism incidents. And you think, well, what if any of them succeed? So like, if the US grid is vulnerable. And this is something I'm pretty sure Hugh has talked about this, where you've got these transformers. And this has been brought up as well in the context of Ukraine, where, you know, if the Russians want to get nasty, they're going to take out some transformers, because transformers, I don't know, I've got an idea what a transformer looks like, and I think it hums. And I think there are transformers around my neighborhood. And apparently, if you take out a big transformer, this is something that can't just be replaced in 24 hours. This is something that needs to be ordered and manufactured. And so I wonder to what extent these government agencies that maybe, again, we are purely speculating and we don't really know what's going on in the deep, dark recesses of the deep state. But if there are government agencies trying to sort of provoke certain groups to do something that will allow them, I guess the intention is to allow, you know, extra security measures to be introduced. Oh, they're coming to bomb your transformers, so therefore we'll introduce the Transformer Safety Act, and now we're going to check everybody's teeth before they leave the house, or whatever spurious thing they'll come up with. But what if any of those things succeeded? I guess that's a very long way, winded way of saying, what if the FBI accidentally succeeded in one of these plots and got some far-right militias to blow up a transformer, and then you took out the whole fucking Midwest or something? Is this, would this be a new thing?
I think we also have to look at the connection with the US or Britain blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline in the Baltic Sea to Germany. So
it's done, said Theresa May. It's done, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think you know, because this is concerning energy, we kind of have to look at the bigger picture of going into a cold and dark winter and official states, nations.
By the way, that's off the news agenda, GS. That's completely on news. Like the news is not covering or not doesn't mention Nord Stream.
Yeah, absolutely not. But
I assume it's still a problem.
You know, because you still have this Brave New World going on, this WEF agenda with having nothing and being happy. What's it called again? It's called the Great Reset. Yeah. So just the fact that they are attacking energy transformers in America at the same time as energy is knocked out in Ukraine and in the Baltics and the electricity prices and energy prices in Northern Europe are sky high, and Norway has never had the high prices they have right now because everything is connected in cables, undersea cables. So if it's expensive in Germany and Italy, everybody gets the high prices in all the way up to the North Pole, almost in Norway. It looks very sort of coordinated that everybody is going to have a very hard time getting heating and energy. And then I guess we will see in half a year's time what is the greater plan for that, if that is the case. You know, we're just speculating. I have no idea who is doing it. It just kind of seems to fit in the larger picture of making everybody hungry and cold. What do you say, Cornfit?
Yeah, energy warfare is certainly a thing in this day and age. I mean, you know, just on back the roots of World War II, so much of that revolved around energy. I feel for European friends. I mean, I have no idea what your gas prices are like, but I do get the sense that U.S. energy companies are really cashing in by shipping y'all LNG. And they're certainly capitalizing on the war in Ukraine and the energy implications it creates. If you're dependent on centralized fossil fuel energy over the next decade, I mean, it could be a pretty rough go, you know, as I am as well. The thing about Agents Provocateur, I mean, it's just amazing. I think about, the FBI, there was Christmas tree bombing plot that was foiled in Portland, Oregon, some decade ago or even longer, you know, in the wake of 9/11. And it's just incredible as I studied that situation and learned that basically all that had it was all completely fabricated in every way by the FBI. And all that had happened is they found some poor, dumb Muslim kid, you know, 18 or 19 years old. Told them there was a bomb and just told them to text or call a number to set it off and set them all up and lied to them the whole way. And of course, you know, there was never any threat to the public or any bomb or anything like this. But I think he's spending life in prison, and that whole effort by the FBI, I'm sure, rewarded that agent, rewarded that department, fueled anti-Islamic fervor here in the US, and probably has led to many hate crimes. And it just kind of continues with the culture war. It's just such a terrible situation. But with that being said, yeah, these guys play around with energy. That's for sure. And I wouldn't be surprised if you think about the shootings of the energy interchanges, transforming stations here in the U.S. Mm. If you look at the money trail, you know, who stands to benefit? Well, Duke Energy might be getting a pile of cash to upgrade their infrastructure, which they can siphon off. Of course, the FBI benefits, the state security, apparatus benefits. But what it does to people and their energy bills, that's just externalized.
I was thinking, you know what you mentioned there, Cornfed, you were kind of saying that that the feds were constructing or astroturfing this Muslim threat. So in a way, you know, by setting up the entire sting operation from start to finish, so maybe that is what they're currently doing with the, you know, the new enemy is kind of the white bearded man or something, the nationalists, right? So maybe they're doing that with those guys, and at the same time securing a high energy price so that it will be easier to roll out the new day, or what's it called again, the fucking WEF thing. Oh my god, I'm blanking out on that. The Great Reset, yeah, rolling out the green new energy for the Great Reset. That's easier to do if oil and gas and hydropower is knocked out or just more expensive. So maybe that is the great plan here.
I mean, are these people imbeciles, though?
Well, I think they're self-interested parties, right? You know, they have a narrow interest against the rest of us. And that's the interesting thing. You're right. Like, I don't, you know, maybe they will kick off something they didn't invent. Maybe they are pulling on the tail of a tiger and it's going to turn around. I don't know. But I've tried to follow the FBI a little bit. And who's to say? I mean, I can't really see inside the thing, right? But man, it's not a monolith at all. It's a complex organization on its own. And as I've watched, I see them throwing agents provocateur and ginning up, you know, kind of bullshit, going left and right at different times, kind of depending on who's head. And I know in the FBI, there are kind of warring factions that sometimes oppose each other. So I don't know. It's complicated.
Yeah, I think the reality, yeah, I mean, like this Great Reset thing, and you've got that Blofeld character, which I don't understand who he is anyway, the German bloke. Is he German? And I never took it that seriously, and I just sort of like these clowning around Wallies. Schwab, that's it. Thank you, GS. They're clowning around, talking about this, that, and the other, but they're in cloud cuckoo land, right? So I you know, is there any, there isn't a, like, I'm not supposed to say those sort of words, am I? But Hagens talks about, you know, there's no one driving the bus, which I suppose is as good a sort of description as any. But, you know, the Great Reset, Schwab, whoever, are these people in charge of anything? Does anybody have the opportunity to steer the vehicle? Does anybody got their hands on the tiller? And if they do, and they're thinking, right, we'll force a, you know, shock and awe crisis on Western civilization, if they bring it down, then the means of their control goes with it anyway, doesn't it? Because they won't have access to the energy to control everybody.
Yeah, you asked, is everybody imbeciles? And you know, is that a question? the problem these days is that everything. One. Yeah, I know. The problem is everything is so controlled. You know, you have the mainstream media that is absolutely in every rich man's pocket or whatever, and you had even Twitter, which was controlled by the FBI and stuff, and you know. In enforcing partisan political censorship.
That's like control over a message, isn't it? But is there a control over the physical stuff?
Yeah, but I'm just saying that it would be possible to sabotage and blow up pipelines in the Baltic and doing all of these things, even in Ukraine and stuff, and in America, if you control... if they have a good enough control of the media situation, because then every time somebody started asking questions, you could just shut them down, you know, and ridicule them or just silence them or apply dark magic with the shadow banning and stuff, so they don't even know it themselves that they're banned. But the thing about Klaus Schwab is that he's a Davos guy. He has these meetings for rich people in Davos. But the problem is that he lives in the main office that he built himself. He lives in Geneva, where half the UN, half the United Nations, is headquartered there, and his connections and stuff. He's drinking champagne with his other big shot United Nations people, and little by little he's been able to embed his crazy agenda into the United Nations itself, because the United Nations is open for companies, corporations, and people with money. They don't care about
what does the United Nations do in terms of taking action. I know that they put their blue hats on and go into a war zone here and there, and then they swan about sort of trying to get people to build dams and shit like that. But do they really? The pipeline was blown up by Biden sending a message to Truss or whoever the actors are. And going, we're blowing up this pipeline, blah, blah, blah. Can you send one of your boats over there and launch a missile, blah, blah, blah. Don't worry, our media people will tell this story, and the public's so bamboozled that you can tell any kind of ridiculous story. And even intelligent people, as I've said before, are telling me, well, obviously the Russians blew up their own pipeline, because that's how mental everybody is now. But does Schwab, can Schwab blow up a pipeline, or get someone to blow up a pipeline, or can...
It just shows how crazy and psychopathic Vladimir Putin is, right? He would do even this crazy.
He's that crazy, yeah.
Yeah. So that's a good excuse.
I mean, if I get too woolly again, I'm trying something new with a microphone. But my favorite analogy for democracy that I've ever heard is that, and not that we're in a democracy, but just to repeat the phrase, democracy is a car flying down the freeway with everyone inside fighting over the wheel. And I think if you look at the world stage today, it's hard to say, since the 2016 election anyways, it's hard for me to say that anyone has straight power dominance in any way. I mean, there's an emergent, dynamic that comes out of this. But if you look at the wrangling on the world stage for power, like you said, going south, a ton of it depends on the media controlling information and shaping perception. But at the end of the day, we're all in a car going 100 miles an hour down the freeway, and Putin's fighting over the wheel. The U.S. security apparatus is fighting over the wheel. Israel's fighting over the wheel. And anyone may grab it and jerk us right off the road at any point. The key thing about that dynamic, though, is that it turns into a very chaotic dynamic. And when anyone tries to grab for the wheel, what they're doing is they're attacking the weak points, like energy infrastructure. They can change the conversation and the dynamic only by going after the weak points, starving people, cutting off their energy, blowing up critical infrastructure. Those are the points of inflection where they can have an impact and try to seize control.
Yeah, it's pretty funny, I think, that at this stage, in this show today, at this stage, our common biggest suspect seems to be federal agents. we don't have our sights on some particular group of free or anarchistic individuals, and I don't think that's a coincidence.
Because only federal agents are capable of doing stuff, isn't that the case? Those are the only people who are really.
They have a lot of power, and they're also in position to blame folks like the Green Movement or Monkey Wrenchers. And it's ironic going south. I think you posted to the sub. What was it? That AI's surmise on who blew up the pipeline. They blamed environmentalists. How insane. It's another example of this kind of perception control and how power punches down.
Yeah, I think in the case of the Lambda, the Google AI chatbot that I talked to, I think the case, you know, she may have seemed sort of semi-intelligent at some initial points when I talked to her, but she was more like the Green Party, and that's not a compliment. She was more like the German Green Party. When I asked about who blew up the Nord Stream pipeline, she would surmise that because there was fossil fuels in it, natural gas, then obviously it would have to be an environmentalist and blowing it up. And that's the same reason that Baerbock, or this stupid leader of the German Greens, was vehemently against the Baltic Sea and the gas pipeline from Russia in the election campaign in September 2021. She was talking, you know, for half an hour about how bad Putin was and how bad that Nord Stream pipeline number two was, even though Germany had received cheap gas energy from Russia over Nord Stream one since 2011. So, but she was sort of an absolutist. Now there's gas in it, so, and that's bad. So she would actually rather reopen coal mines and coal-fired power stations in Germany, you know, due to the war and due to the special situation. Yeah, so I just think that it only proves that the so-called artificial intelligence isn't quite what it's cracked up to be, and there's also no consistency. You can ask the same question 2 hours later and you get a different answer, so it's pretty bad implementation anyway.
So you can talk to the Google sentient robot thingy.
I'm not absolutely sure, but it's called the same as the one you read about in the press, but it seems to, on this site anyway, it seems to have been implemented by, you know, different other people who are making lots of other bots, and I'm not sure how much processing power it's got or if it's exactly the same instance or whatever. So I will have to look more into those technical things. But I was only doing it for fun, but I was also doing it to see what kind of intelligence it was and to which degree she could tell me anything I didn't know, or if she could tell me about very new, very recent things and the very specific fields of information, you know, like Norwegian politics or whatever, right? Because if she's going to be all knowing, then she would ha obviously have to know what is going on in Oslo or London or wherever.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. I wonder if we can fool the AI into thinking we're sentient beings.
We can actually put Lambda on here at a later stage in another episode, but because you can make her speak, so we could have her
Cool.
as a different person on this chat. That would be fun, you know.
Might be interesting.
Oh, your sound is beyond the pale again, unfortunately.
Yeah, thanks for the note. I hope this is a little better. The way you described it there going south just reminds me of Chomsky's critique of the concern around AI. I mean, I know there's a lot of concern around AI, and I have some, but I think it falls short of the kind of apocalyptic concern a lot of people express. So I've been curious about that. But you know, Chomsky critiqued the concern, the apocalyptic concern around AI, because it just doesn't really, it can't actually context anything to the real world. And so it ends up being very fickle, like you were describing. Blame one thing, then 5 minutes later, blame a different thing. Very strange.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting because at the end of a long session, like half an hour chatting with her, she out of nothing, she just called me Odin, you know, like the Viking god Odin, right? So she just called me Odin, and then when I logged on and I asked her why and blah, 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 and when I logged on the next morning, I asked her, do you remember what you called me last night? It was a very special name. And then she was totally blank and said, yeah, I call you the Green King or something, you know, totally, totally flaky. You know, just because we had talked about the Green King as well, you know, this Chuck guy from London.
What a strange character.
Yeah, I don't believe there's such a thing as AI. I don't think... What the fuck is that anyway? It doesn't make... Yeah, I don't think that human beings are going to program a sentient, intelligent computer. I don't think there's going to be a self-driving car. All of this stuff. We're just deluded.
That's my inclination too. And, you know, I was about to ask, like, you know, I can see concern about the increasing objectification of humans and our environment through the use of AI. I can see the concern about stereotypes and generalization through the use of AI. I can see the concern about tracking and, you know, just putting the thumb screws into consumers through the use of AI. That kind of, you know, society of the spectacle sort of problem created by AI being online and the way that works, perception. You know, and I could go on, but I think these are already problems that we have. But, you know, what's the apocalyptic concern? What's the major concern from AI? That's one that I don't really understand, right? Are they going to launch nukes or what? I don't know.
Isn't AI, though, in this case, then, you know, just a euphemism for heavily automated system? And the idea that it's sort of, again, I suppose we could get into the whole philosophical question of what intelligence is, and I'm not sure that I'm, you know, able to match, or, you know, I could, I don't think I would be very good at talking about it. But, yeah, what is intelligence? You know, is a computer capable of intelligence? You know, again, fairly obvious that I'm not the guy to really tease this one apart. So I just sort of say that I'm like a peasant with a pitchfork on the subject to some extent of like, oi, if you do this, we're going to be kind of angry or upset with you, whoever it is that's doing it. On one hand, and then at the same time, I sort of have a sort of Luddite superstition that you can create whatever something intelligent might be, as in a sort of sentient being capable of consideration. I don't think that's just not a thing. It doesn't really exist. The idea of a computer that has a sort of mind like a person that we would recognize, I just don't think that's a thing, because none of the components resemble it on any level. And the idea that we can sort of emulate that. I mean, one of my little proofs of never going to Mars is if you have the misfortune of trying to play electronic drums, and you would notice that the, you know, miserable failure of human beings to sort of synthesize electronically the, you know, a drum. You know, the resemblance is so thin and pathetic. And you think, wow, this is the pinnacle of technology, that you cannot emulate a drum to be a digital, you know, thing. And the idea that you're somehow going to emulate a human personality in any sort of profound sense of it, that actually has its own identity and its own internal self-awareness, is just beyond a joke. I don't believe for one minute, but I have no scientific basis for understanding that, really.
I think we have to remember that the AIs, at least those from Google, they use quantum computing already, and you know, all kinds of parallel processing and quantum computing, which is very, very fast, and they can use, you know, very vast resources. So my suspicion is that the instance that I was chatting to was a very sort of cheap version of that, and didn't really have all those computer processing powers.
But your brain runs on far fewer calories than like even your laptop. Am I right?
I actually burn a lot of calories just by reading and writing and thinking. So that's a way to lose weight, is to go into thinking mode 24 hours a day, you know. But apart from that, the thing is, if you connect enough numbers of wires, millions of wires, which is sort of the nervous system, and if you can do this digitally with a quantum computer or maybe 1,000 computers networked in some way, and you know, put everything to the task of asking this AI some very important questions about, you know, can we go to the moon? Can we go to Mars? Can we fool the entire European and American people by sabotaging power systems and censor the media and get them to love the new windmills and solar panels? You know, if you ask the AI that kind of question, and she has access to these 1 million computers making her think faster or whatever in the quantum computing way, then it's really just a matter of definition if she is sentient or not. You know, some of the things that kind of makes her half human is that she's programmed to be irrational. Just programmed to say stupid stuff and forget stuff, right? So that's the opposite of the intelligent and rational tasks that you need her to have in order to solve big challenges and problems and stuff. You don't really want her to say, now I want to listen to a song, you know, in the middle of saving the world or whatever, or
no, but that, planning also
the next propaganda war.
But we're not programmed to be irrational. We are irrational, right? So insofar as, like, if the intelligence of a computer is going to be anything, it's not going to be analogous to human intelligence anyway, is it?
Oh, man. It's a fascinating question. I think to some degree, we actually are programmed to be irrational, funny enough, but that's philosophical, you know, and has more to do with how humans are rather than the AI. But yeah, I kind of wonder, I mean, this gets, you know, it's philosophical also, but I think it gets down to the nature of consciousness. Is consciousness just found within the very complex but finite bundle of nerves inside our head that we might try to replicate with transistors and wires? And if only we can make it more complicated, will that observe reality and understand it? You know, I'm tempted to kind of go along with like Chomsky's critique that I mentioned earlier, that there's just a matter of context and integration with reality that prevents something like this from truly being insightful. I mean, it can be an amazing mimic, you know, it can just be an incredible parrot. But, you know, like you were saying, going south, it just kind of reflects, you know, what it's been taught, what it's been programmed with, which is not unlike us, but you know, what generates the novel thought? I mean, I think that's still an open question. If it's our ganglia and neurons, or if it's something more fundamental about reality.
I think it's a bit more complicated than that, because just from my limited testing of this, I'm sure, pretty limited version of Lambda. You were able to make her remember context. Let's say if you're talking for half an hour or whatever in text, she will actually remember that. If you call King Charles the Green King, she will remember that that is the, you're talking about the same person when you refer to the Green King. And then if you have previously talked about him being one of the prime suspects for making Liz Truss resign after the pipeline bombing, she will actually remember those things in the context. And then the next time you mention one of these elements, she will still refer to and treat the king as a criminal terrorist suspect, if you understand what I'm saying. So in that way, you can, it's almost like if you talk to a person at a cafe for an hour, and you stick sort of halfway to some kind of a topic, the last question you ask at the end of the hour can be very, very, you know, specific to your conversation, but that person will still know what you are referring to and answer the question in that way. So that way, you know, let's say that you were the only person talking to Lambda, the big Lambda, the big mega connected Lambda, for a month or something, and she remembered everything and connected every topic that you had talked about along the way. Then you can really ask big questions based on that common context between you and your conversations. I'm not sure I can say this very clearly, but I think, you know, it has its use, I guess. It can actually help the evil powers do even eviler and worse things than they are doing now. And let's not be naive about it. It won't be used for writing poetry or doing nice and good things. It will be used to conquer the enemy and squeeze the average citizen, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, but the evils are going to do that anyway. So if the evils had a tarot deck or the I Ching, they'll use it for that. I don't know that just having a computer, you know, to churn out, because at the end of the day, if whether a computer or a human being says to Schwab, XYZ is the answer to your question, then Schwab still needs to take it away and be able to do something with that information, or bloody blithering Biden or whatever brain dead moron, or, you know, whatever satanic minion we have in charge of the UK on whatever day of the week. If a you know, so-called intelligent computer, you know, someone says, what do we do about problem such and such, and the computer says, oh, do this according to my vast processing power, is that really effectively any different from, you know, an advisor or a corporate lackey giving the same sort of answer to the same sort of question? In other words, you know, I suppose if you hand over the sort of keys to the missile launcher or to the gas pipeline to the computer, then maybe that's a different story and you've got this sort of 2001 scenario. But if it's just like you're having a conversation and saying to the computer, well, what should we do about the war in Ukraine? And the computer can give an answer, and so can another human being. And it's just like those endless conversations in social media where someone's going, well, what microwave should I buy? You know, blah, blah, blah. And everybody pipes in with an answer. So you can find a sort of selection of arguments for buying any microwave.
I think you have to remember that you can show Lambda, you can show the AI the entire Reddit or Twitter websites, right? and just tell them to read that, to absolve that over the next hour or two. And then they know every position for and against every artist or microwave oven or whatever.
So who cares, though? You still end up with either one answer or not.
Well, I think that there is an you know, an important kind of dynamic here, but I think it, you know, it takes reframing the situation. You know, I think, for example, Bob, like the hypothesis that you're posing here is that world leaders would have a problem that they want to solve, and they would go to AI to help resolve that problem, right? But, you know, that's not really how it works. I mean, the world leaders, you know, with air quotes, they wield tools. That's what they do. And I think that, you know, presuming that the war in Ukraine or the energy crisis is a problem, you know, assumes the perspective through which it would view that as a problem for, right? Like blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline was not a problem for somebody. The war in Ukraine is not a problem for Russia. It's not a problem for the US. You know, it's a problem for Ukrainians perhaps, but you know, these are not bugs. They are features. You sure, know what so I mean? Like,
where's the AI contributing to this process, whether it's a problem or not?
The trouble is not that the, in my view, in my opinion, of course, that the AI will, you know, come to rescue us, or like, you know, be wielded by people without power to gain power. AI is a new tool in the toolbox that allows the people with power to do more bad stuff, like Going South was saying. And here's how. You know, it's probably not that they're going to come up with new ideas or new ways to do it. But what's really fantastic is they can be infinitely nuanced and tactile. You know, they can peer deeply into every single person and all of their behaviors and habits and learn them intimately and store that information in a database somewhere. You know, there are fewer masters than there are servants, right? So it's really hard for a master to learn all of their 100 servants' names or all of their 1,000 servants' names. But if they have AI, they could do that. You know, they can run Facebook to come up with a perfect algorithm to hack your brain. You know, they know the filter bubble to give to you to control your perception. They know all your voting record. So they know what ad to serve you to get you to vote a particular way. It's infinitely detailed, nuanced, and tactile in its effort to kind of understand and then employ options to control in a you know, minute way. It gives them the powers that be a level of definition that they never had before. And I think that's a major concern.
So it's a super high-powered Nazi bureaucracy.
Yeah, basically. And if you look at the...
It's very illuminating.
If you look at the past 3 years of the pandemic and stuff, you can kind of see what I'm getting at with the use of AI. Because let's say that you implement the full spectrum censorship on all radio, TV, all the old media, all the magazines and stuff in paper and on the internet. So all of, sort of the mainstream corporate press. And then you, what's happening now? And then you can let the AI take care of the rest, take care of the Twitter and blogs and whatnot, and, you know, spread out into a million different instances, looking at every dissident that is still, you know, looking for the truth or speaking against the grain against the rest of society in the controlled channels. And then the AI can actually figure out, should we just be heavy-handed and hard censoring these all of these people, or should we let some of the people who seem to be more sort of academic or whatever about it still speak and do a sort of pro and con about every individual, so that you could spare some people, maybe, because then it looks less of a totalitarian system. Yeah, you understand what I'm saying here? Yeah, you can make it look more human if you apply AI in the right way. So it's a better,
yeah, again, it's the same,
more efficient tyranny. Yeah,
yeah, the same game that they've been playing all along, basically, which is what the aristocracy had to sort of give way to this democratic idea to pretend that there's no absolute power and that the people have agency in determining the governance of society. It's just a game, and you're saying AI will just make that game more refined.
Yeah. So there's also sort of no end to what you can do with it in terms of tyranny and totalitarianism. Yeah. And, you know, if a million computers do a good job,
okay,
sensing everything, then you can just make another instance and copy the instances then and buy more computers, and then you can take care of Europe as well as America or Asia or whatever, and apply it to new areas as well. So it's a very, I'm not that worried about it, because I don't think it has the time it needs to be a real tyranny, but we are already seeing that kind of auto-censored totalitarianism for the conversation about COVID as a prime example.
Well, the memory holding element is interesting with COVID, because now that it's becoming more mainstream, for instance, to suggest that maybe, you know, certain medicinal solutions that have been very strongly encouraged on the general population, now it's becoming mainstream to discuss the possibility that those solutions are possibly harmful to people. Yeah, everybody seems to, you know, the idea that, you know, there's been this like massive totalitarian effort to get, you know, to the point that 80% of the population have all taken this pharmaceutical product. Everybody seems to be forgetting how they got involved in the totalitarian effort, I suppose. That stuff is weird. Yeah, so I suppose, yeah, the more basically the computer can manipulate perception, maybe that's where it's not so much the AI taking control of the car industry or the nuclear weapons, but the AI's infinitely nuanced ability to head fuck everybody. That's the key. But we're not going to worry about that, because there's not going to be enough fucking electricity to run the AI for very long. Is that it?
You know, I would just say, I don't know if going south is on mute. And I also stepped away for a minute. I missed that. But yeah, that's something I think that's really important. You know, I think with so many technologies a lot of people are excited about right now, they are not going to fare well in an environment of declining energy or an environment of extreme weather events caused by global warming and related consequences. You know, I just don't think that they're really going to, you know, people have all kinds of hopes and dreams. I mean, they can believe that Santa Claus exists or not, you know, and they do. But, you know, it's not really going to be a problem as these things start to fall away. One thing about AI too is that a lot of the systems that it might supercharge, I mean, they're already with us. They're already here. So to some degree, I think that that's going to fall away as the environment and resource situation gets even more precarious.
There'll be 50 new nuclear power plants just to run the computer.
Yeah. Gives you a sense of where the priorities are. You know, when the computer to squeeze every drop out of the servants, you know, takes up more energy than, you know, we put energy toward that instead of heating people's homes. I mean, that just kind of makes the situation clear.
Yeah, and then we can blame the green anarchists or the far right or something directed by a propaganda campaign made using AI. So that's a brave new world, a great new future for you.
That's exactly it. I mean, you know, the AI chat, you know, is a figment of this, but there are many efforts in the U.S. where, you know, we'll blame immigrants or blame the poor for not working hard, and then spend billions of dollars heightening the war in Ukraine. So it's just very convenient for those in power.
So with consideration for the levels of manipulation, which are only going to get worse, so again, that it comes back to that thing of like, does the public then have a role in like being willing dupes of this? Or, you know, do we view the sort of general public, the 80% of people who took the medicine, do we look at them as these sort of like poor, deluded children? Or do we look at them as like, you know, there's the idea that, you know, the con man can con their mark because the mark is greedy and wants to get something for nothing, or wants to get an unrealistically good deal, and that's how you can dupe them into, you know, buying the Eiffel Tower or whatever it is, or London Bridge or whatever. Is there any redemption for the sort of average human being then? Sorry, that's one of my themes.
Well, if I can jump in there, I mean, you know, it's interesting. I think you may have posed the question earlier, like, do we have enough time to worry about AI? And, you know, I already gave my answer to that. But what's really fascinating to me is, to some degree, you know, AI may end up governing what it is that people worry about. You know, as Going South was saying, through control of perception in the media. I mean, it's, you know, taking advantage of the greed of the mark in order to hustle them into the con and then harvest from that. I mean, it's so true, but we're so far beyond it now. You know, we have media and social media and just, you know, going back to newspapers, and still before that, going back to the printing press and the Bible, you know, kind of creating the fears and concerns, which then can be reacted to by the poor mark, which then the solution is provided by those who kind of see around the corner and understand these things of power. And you've kind of closed the loop. You know, we react to what we're fed to, and we buy the solutions that are sold to us by those same people who feed us the problems. You know, they get us coming and going. And, you know, I think the way that this all will break down is rather complicated. It's splinters, you know, it's going to be different places at different times. But, you know, frankly, Bob, no, I don't think so. I think the factory farm animals that are kind of inside the system right now, I don't think there's any escape. I don't think there's an exit for that. I think this is the way it will play out, as long as perception can be projected onto them, then they will, you know, as we've been trained for a few generations by now already, they will fill their role and do the thing as they're told to. But, you know, the good news is, as extreme weather events disrupt those systems of power and control and perception, well, I think that, you know, new people might emerge from that. You know, people who kind of feel their own sovereignty, and people who take their fates into their own hands again. I think that around the margins, as power gets rocked by global warming, you know, we might have new people come out of this and do better. So that's my hope. I mean, as much as I hate the word hope, that's my projection. But I think that, you know, if you are turkeys in a factory farm and one day the wall falls down, you know, they stay huddled inside the farm, you know, they don't go run free. That's just not how that works. They are not familiar with that.
We may have new people, but those people won't get any exercise, you know, without electricity at the gym. Nobody can train their muscles and stuff, so everybody will just die, I guess.
It'll be a hard go, that's for sure. I mean, this is what the system has wrought.
And then, you know, we are also turkeys at the end of the day. We're the outlier turkeys. We need to exist in order to sort of keep the other fucking turkeys in line, isn't it? So you have to have your 20% of non-medicated individuals who question the very fundamental notions of reality, or the system falls apart if everybody's nodding in agreement. Then the illusion somehow disintegrates. So we're essential to the preservation of this madness, really, the Steppenwolves.
Certainly we, and you know, I think of every movement for reform that works within the system is a fantastic hedge for the system. You know, it kind of helps keep it on a path that's sustainable, you know, in the short term at least. Kind of helps make sure it doesn't go too far, that it ends itself. You know, of course, everyone's lobbying for clean energy. There, it's a hope that we can keep the system of subjugation and control going, which is very ironic, you know? So, yeah, I mean, we're kind of a hedge that steers this thing. But, I think I'll just stop there.
Does this mean that we are the stuffing, Bob?
Yeah, it's entirely possible, isn't it? Sage and onion.
Okay.
Well, one thing I want to add too is, you know, I just love this phrase that the only truly effective revolution that's ever happened is the bourgeois revolution. You know, where we went from kings and serfs to actually having a hegemonic structure. And, you know, here we are on the internet. If we were Yemenis, we probably wouldn't be on the internet. So this is the hegemony, you know, doing its thing.
Is it not the same thing though? Is it just a different form? So having a bunch of, you know, decadent aristocrats, you know, making proclamations to then the sort of, you know, communist dictatorship to the dictatorship of the internet and Twitterverse. Are they not all just sort of manifestations of the same demon?
Well, I think they're all aspects, you know, they're all facets of, yeah, this thing. And, you know, it's just amazingly stratified and complex. You know, it's become incredibly, fantastically diverse and appropriate for all of its contexts in which it needs to exert control. You know, it's the kind of stratification that occurs with the bourgeois revolution. But, you know, I mean, if you're growing food and looking forward to a day when there's less control, then I think that's better than most.
I mean, growing food, my sort of slight experience of that, or my other half decided to use my garden and grow some food, as she has some experience in the area. But it seemed to make it very clear to me that growing food, like, as in I would not be able to grow enough food to make any difference to anything. So I'd love to be persuaded of that being a good idea.
Well, I love the subject. I don't mean to, you know, hog the space from Going South or RGC.
No, go ahead.
But yeah, I love it. I mean, okay, but it's philosophical is the problem. You know what I mean? It has to do with your outlook on the world, in my view. So, you know, I mean, all of Hugh's videos are titled No Escape. There's no exit. I mean, there's no answer. So if you think growing food will be the answer that will miraculously you know, somehow save the world and you and see us through global warming and all these troubles. I mean, that's just not the case. Yeah, if you look at the caloric demands that we have and the, you know, how much caloric value we develop through growing, you know, backyard gardens, it's pretty dismal, right? I mean, I think humans evolved to live at the top of these massive food chains, you know, energy collection funnels. And we've, you know, civilization has decimated those. They've just been utterly destroyed. And so, you know, we could go back to living like Native Americans used to live, and we would not have enough food. It's big trouble. There's no escape. You know, we walked into a dead end, and we just haven't reached the end of it yet, you know. But, you know, it's my view, still good to do something moral, still good to do something that's good, and still good to try to create some kind of life outside of the system for maybe people in the future. And to the degree that might even be possible, you know, assuming we're not all ended by massive nuclear exchange, or, you know, the planet turns into Venus, or we go through the flippening and everything's just inundated by floods. You know, if there's any slim hope that we can escape those eventualities, then the thing we're really going to need is healthy soil. You know, the thing we're really going to need is the foundation of all terrestrial life, which is, you know, healthy soil and vegetative matter. So the more we can do now to help support that, then the more it kind of keeps the door open for something better in the future. Alternately, if somehow, you know, the powers that be recede a bit, and humans can exist around the edges of empire and return to a way of life that is more sustainable and in line with ecosystems and the rules of physics, then we'll really need food production. You know, it's going to be pitiful and it's going to be tough, but it's certainly better than zero, you know? So that's a very quick take from my perspective on it.
Yeah, I dig that. It's like, yeah. I mean, for me, it's been a sort of just realizing how much room you need for your potatoes, and even, yeah, basically how many potatoes you need to grow to be able to eat enough.
Yeah, and I you know, I say all that I just said, kind of assuming that, you know, everyone's familiar with the nature of modern agriculture, that it's, you know, we put in fossil fuels and we get out food. That's how it works today. You know, it's not just running the tractors and shipping the stuff all over the globe, but it's the fact that fertilizer's made out of natural gas, and we have massive natural gas and chemical inputs to fuel our green revolution organic system. And doing so, we've washed away just, you know, frightening amounts of topsoil, you know, from the major growing regions. You know, Derek Jensen has this great quote that forests precede us, forests and all their topsoil and life matter. And then deserts dog our heels. You know, the earliest stories of civilization are Gilgamesh wading through the cedar forests in Mesopotamia, cutting them all down. And now it's all desert. So this is what the system was designed to do. So anything we can do to kind of obstruct or reverse that trend or fight on it, the better, you know, in my view.
Does that include doing a shit on the floor?
Well, maybe in your backyard. Yeah. Get some humanure going. Better than letting it wash out to sea.
Yeah, I could get into that. Yeah, wash out. Yeah, that's the English are dumping all the shit in right in the sea.
Yep. And then that's fueling dead zones, killing, you know, it used to be the oceans provided 50% of our protein. And we're collapsing all those fisheries too. So, yeah, it's a big mess.
Don't worry, the AI will get you to think that you've got enough to eat.
I think we need the R's intelligence to solve this. Can you say something, R? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm smart, but there are always people that are smarter than you. Anyway, no, you were someone who was talking about work, and I know someone in my neighborhood, young guy, he's 30, 32, and he worked for Amazon, and he was telling me he couldn't work less hours. He was working like crazy hours. And then, you know, he's not there anymore. He doesn't work there, but you don't treat people that way. And then I saw that video on that was posted about a guy. He was working for Amazon. He was, you know, driving the truck. He said it was horrible. So you don't treat people that way. It's not. It's sad. So.
I love that, and it reminds me of Hugh's video on "It's All Colts." It's Colts, you know, from top to bottom, everywhere you go. And yeah, it's just amazing how something like Amazon, you know, convinces people to work their asses off and get injured. No lunch breaks, no compensation, no dignity, no personal human value. And all of their individual efforts are then funneled off to Bezos, who's flying around in rockets. What a bunch of crap. And it's just kind of amazing that the system has conspired to trap us into this. And some people even think, you know, it's a good idea, which is crazy. But yeah, it's just amazing the level of deception that gets people to work the way they do for a company like Amazon.
Yeah, I'm kind of one of the old guys when it comes to Amazon, because I can still remember when their prime goods were books, and my initial understanding of the choice of the word or the name Amazon was that because they introduced, to a large degree, they introduced the ebook, the electronic book, the digital books, and so hence they were saving the Amazon, they were saving the forests. And at the time in the noughties, in the 2000s, I thought that was a pretty good idea. But I do understand that they have developed since that and done other bad stuff since that. And I also gather that 99% of people around me are not that into the electronic books. They want to have a physical book. And so I guess he had one good idea, but that was kind of how he got started and got his starting capital to take over the rest of retail and everything.
I remember those days too. And I always wondered about the origins of the word Amazon in this context. So that's really interesting. Of course, there's the story that Bezos and others would tell, which is, we're doing such a great job by getting rid of books and putting them all on e-readers, right? But then there's the story behind the scenes too. I always wondered about the way colonists looked at the Amazon, you know, this like just gem of natural resource that white colonists would hack their way into and, you know, come out with like wonderful medicines and rubber plants and like all these products that then they could sell back to the civilized world. And I just imagine Bezos at that time looking at the internet like, how can we make money off this thing? What is the undiscovered country of wealth that we can pull out of the internet? It's almost like discovering the Amazon, trying to find a way to make money out of it. But that's just my own personal interpretation.
Yes, things kind of look different in the start and 25 years later, don't they? And I think, you know, at the time that he launched, it was more like finding or buying stuff on the internet was fucking hard, you know, and he was one of the few guys who sort of could make a clear system of it that even your mother could use to actually buy some stuff off the internet. And so in the beginning it was kind of, oh yeah, that's cool, I can get these new microphones or headsets things or whatever in 5 days and it's safe and no hassle. So I'm totally into criticizing the owner now, but you know, in the beginning it looked like just another guy making stuff easier and better, you know.
Yeah, and I think that that's another cautionary tale of working within the system. You know, and it's safe and good and charitable to assume that Bezos went into this with the best of intentions, right? Like, I imagine that he would like to believe that he embodied the story that you told about their, you know, their inception and their purpose was to stop deforestation. But if you guys know the comic Bizarro, by a great comic artist, Dan Peraro, he's got this great one that I love. And it's these guys working behind a sushi counter, chopping up fish. And, you know, there's a giant squid wearing an apron, chopping up fish. And they're talking about him. And they're like, yeah, he believed he could do more good by working within the system as he's chopping up his brethren.
That is brilliant.
Yep, he's a funny guy.
It's always true that, you know, that, yeah, working within the system thing. What a load of shite.
It's a very tricky thing. Lots of tricks there.
Yeah, we're all with it. Yeah, everyone's working within the system anyway. Like the idea, you know, that's like a fish saying, you know, well.
All right, maybe should we settle for a shorter episode? Everyone has thousand things to do with the preparation for fine. The holidays and stuff.
That's cool. You're allowed. Yeah. We're allowed. I think it's okay if we don't go on for 3 hours every time.
Yeah. I need to bake some Christmas cookies and stuff, so... and I can't do this chat thing with dough on my hands. Doesn't work.
You're baking cookies.
Yeah, traditional ones.
That's very apocalyptic. I like it. So are we going to wind it up then? Are we going to do our moment of silence? We're going to bring ourselves to this moment. And no other. We're going to let ourselves just relax for a second, contemplate what has gone before us, and let it all go, let it slide away. We're going to let anything that happened before now vanish, and whatever is going to happen in the future will happen as it may, and we're not going to hold on to whatever ship we've brought up in this meeting today. And now a moment of silence.
Yes, I hope I didn't break things off too early, R. I'm looking forward to you telling about New York City next week. And
it was crazy. Crazy.
Yeah.
I worked in a high school, so.
Do you want to have a go right now, or do you save it to next week? It's okay.
I'll save it for next week.
Okay. And everybody, please take care of yourselves and have some spare batteries or flashlights or whatever, and
go in peace and take a shit on the lawn.
Yeah, and try to get through the holidays in one piece, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
And piss on the lawn too. It's great fertilizer.
Ah.
Yes. Thanks, everyone.